Hi, I'll be presenting this data. This is from a study out of the University of Illinois at Chicago College of Nursing, and I'm from the School of Public Health, and I collaborate on this study. I have no relationships to disclose. In terms of a little background, premature infants already have biologic risk. And when you add on social environmental risks, it's kind of a double whammy and makes the outcomes worse for those infants than for premature infants without social environmental risks or full-term infants with social environmental risks. Prematurity and social environmental risks both lead to lower quality mother-infant interaction, and poor mother-infant interaction is associated with poor infant health and development. The purpose of this study was to examine the association between social environmental risks and the quality of mother-premature infant interaction. And really what we wanted to tease out was the relative importance of each individual risk factor, the cumulative number of risk factors, and specific patterns of risk factors. So we'll have three different approaches that we're comparing here. The design of the study, it's a randomized clinical trial at two community-based hospitals in Chicago, and it's actually testing a integrated multisensory intervention for mothers and their premature infants. And this is a secondary study to that. We recruited and enrolled mothers shortly after the birth of a premature infant between 29 and 34 weeks of gestational age, and the infants had to be otherwise healthy. And then the mothers had to have at least 2 of 10 predefined social environmental risk factors. So we were really targeting a high-risk group of mothers to see if we could help improve their infants' outcomes. We had a maternal intake interview to assess socio-demographic characteristics, baseline mental health, and social support, and that was done shortly after the infant's birth in the hospital. And then we had follow-up interviews in the hospital before the infant's discharge. And we did have follow-up interviews at 6 weeks corrected age, but I won't be presenting that here, and I apparently forgot to take that out. So our dependent variable is mother-infant interaction, and we measured this using the Nursing Child Assessment Satellite Training Feeding Scale, which I'll call the NCAST from here on out. And this is a 76-item scale, and it includes yes or no questions about the quality of the interaction during the feeding session. And the items have to do with the maternal sensitivity to her infant's cues and her response to the child's distress, as well as social, emotional, and cognitive growth fostering during that feeding session. But there's also infant items about the clarity of the infant's cues toward the mother and responsiveness toward the mother. So we videotaped a feeding between the mother and her infant shortly before the infant's discharge from the hospital, and then the items were coded from there. Our independent variables are our set of 10 social environmental risk factors. And in the interest of time, I've also put our sample prevalence on here for each of the 10 so you can get a sense of our population. So one of them was minority status, and we actually had all African American and Latinas in our group with a prevalence of 100%. Teen birth was defined as age of delivery less than 20. We had 19% of our sample were teens. Low education was defined depending on age. So if you were a teen and you had less than high school education and you weren't still in school, then we consider that low education for age. And if you were 20 or older and had less than a high school education, you had low education. And poverty was defined as household income less than 185% of the federal poverty level. And this, the reason for this cutoff is practical, because when we asked women to report their income, it wasn't that they were refusing to tell us, but that they really just couldn't estimate it. We had a lot of women in our study who had husbands who were day laborers, who had inconsistent work, so they really had a hard time estimating for us their income. So we also asked if they were receiving benefits from WIC, and the cutoff for eligibility for WIC in Illinois is 185% of the federal poverty level. So we used a combination of the income and WIC variables to define poverty in the sample, and 89% of our women fell in that group. So you can see it would have been nicer to delineate that a little further, but we couldn't with the data limitations. Three more of the risk factors were childcare burden, defined as having another child less than 2 in the household or 4 or more children under 18 in the household, which affected 35% of our women. Not living with the baby's father was true for 44%, and residing in a disadvantaged neighborhood, according to the Index of Neighborhood Disadvantage score from the census tract, and 38% of our women had that criteria. And then there was a set of three mental health and social support factors. So depression was measured as self-reported history or screening high on the CESD or a postpartum depression scale. High trait anxiety, which we use the STAY-Y2 for that, and chose the highest quartile to define high anxiety, and low social support using the personal resources questionnaire, the lowest quartile for low social support. So we had 188 women enrolled in the study, and here are some of their other characteristics. They were about half African American and half Latina, and about half of the infants were male. So we had three data analysis methods to test kind of our three hypotheses about the social environmental risk factors and their effect on mother-infant interaction. The first, we used just t-tests to identify the impact of each individual social environmental risk factor on NCAS scores. The second was a linear regression to look at whether there was a dose response for the cumulative number of risk factors and the mother-infant interaction. And then our third approach was to use a hierarchical cluster analysis to identify patterns of risk factor in our sample. And then we used, after we identified those patterns, we looked to see if the mean NCAS scores were different for women with different patterns. And in doing this cluster analysis, the first couple of times I ran this to look at the clusters, all of the teens seemed to be falling in one of two clusters. So I went back and stratified by age first and then performed the clustering within age group to make that more well-defined, that the teens were in certain clusters fully and that the older women were in the other clusters. So I'll start to present the results here. These are the results for the individual risk factors. And we found that only two were independently related to the quality of the mother-infant interaction. And first I want to say just that the overall mean NCAS score was 60. And you remember it's a 76-item scale. So, you know, the range, the theoretical range is 0 to 76. And I wanted to point out our N here, which is 108. We had a bit of an attrition between getting the baseline interviews and getting the videotaped feeding session at the infant's discharge. And this was mostly due to quick discharges of the infant where we couldn't coordinate to get a study staff member there to interview the woman and videotape a feeding before the infant went home from the hospital. But I did compare the social environmental risk factors between those who we did get feeding sessions on and those who we didn't, and there was no difference in any of those. So the two individual risk factors were that having the baby's father not living in the household actually resulted in higher mean NCAS scores than having the baby's father living in the household. And we can't really explain this with the data that we have, but I'm speculating that perhaps the mother is already kind of geared up to knowing that she's going to be the single care provider for this baby, and maybe it's putting a little bit more effort into making sure that she has initial bonding with the baby. The other factor was high trait anxiety, and women with high trait anxiety had significantly lower scores on mother-infant interaction than those with low trait anxiety, which was not surprising. Trait anxiety seems to be a factor in our study that is very influential. Now, these were the findings that surprised us the most, and this is when we looked at, on the x-axis, you can see the cumulative number of risk factors. From two through a group, we had to group the 7 to 9. And what we expected, and from the literature on child health outcomes anyhow, is that with each increasing number of these SE risks, the outcomes get worse in a dose response fashion. And we didn't see that in our study, and we're not sure if it's because we're looking at very early outcomes, this particular outcome being actually mother-infant interaction. And maybe the effect of the cumulative risk factors hasn't affected the infant yet or hasn't affected that relationship. But because this was one of the main secondary hypotheses for the study was about these risk factors and this dose response. So since we didn't see that, we thought, well, maybe there is something to patterns of risk, and that's what prompted us to look at the data a different way using cluster analysis. So now I'm going to show those results. And this slide is pretty busy, but I just want to highlight a few things. The best cluster solution for the non-teens was a 5-cluster solution. And I labeled each of the clusters based on the proportion of the women who had each risk factor, comparing that to the overall proportion. So I just want to point out cluster 4 was a cluster in which 100% of the women were less than 185% of the poverty level, and 100% had less than a high school education. In this cluster, though small, was actually the one with significantly lower scores on mother-infant interaction. And this is surprising, because we did all of the clustering first, and we did it with the entire sample of 188 women before looking at outcomes. And when we first looked at the clusters, we said, wow, look at cluster 5. These women have low education. There's a high proportion of the women depressed, a high proportion with high trait anxiety, low social support, living in a disadvantaged neighborhood. And we thought that this might be our poorest outcome group. But what's interesting for mother-infant interaction is it really appears to be the poverty and the education that are driving the lower scores on mother-infant interaction. And among the teens, they really fell out into two groups pretty equally. We only had 17 teens in our final sample. And there was a low-risk group and a high-risk group, but there didn't appear to be differences between them or between the older women in terms of mother-infant interaction. So the strength of this study is that we did measure a wide variety of social environmental risk factors at baseline. And that we were really working with an underserved and understudied population of women and their premature infants, a very vulnerable population, and we've seen some effects of our intervention, which is exciting, but for a different talk. The limitations, however, were small sample size. I'm used to working with the large national surveys and with birth certificate records. And for me, this clinical study, the sample size of 108 is really difficult because I know that our findings are based on a small amount of data. But I think that we could try to replicate this in a larger sample. Another limitation for the cluster analysis in particular is that we had a set of 10 dichotomous risk factors. And with dichotomies, you don't have a lot of variability. So the clustering algorithm tries to cluster observations into groups, and there's a lot of ties when you don't have much variability. You have a lot of women that maybe have the same values. So sometimes the algorithm is kind of arbitrary which cluster the women get put into if there are ties like that. So that's a limitation. And then in terms of generalizability, this sample was mostly Latina, African American, high social environmental risk, urban, so it really can't be generalized beyond that. So in conclusion, we found that women with high trait anxiety and women with the baby's father in the household appeared to have lower quality mother-infant interaction. But the cumulative number of risk factors does not appear to be correlated with mother-infant interaction in a dose-response fashion as we expected it would be. We demonstrated that we could classify women as belonging to clusters according to their patterns of social environmental risks, and that the pattern of SE risks may be more relevant than the total number of risk factors with regard to outcomes, specifically maternal-infant interaction. And we found that a subgroup of impoverished women with less than a high school education had the lowest quality interaction of all groups in the sample. In terms of public health implications, this just adds to the evidence base for social determinants of health. We know that education and economic opportunity are crucial and that we need to continue to think more broadly about interventions that include improved education and improved economic opportunity for women of childbearing age. Women with social environmental risks who just had a preterm infant should receive anticipatory guidance to help improve mother-infant interaction, and that is one of the goals of this intervention study. And then women with both low education levels and economic disadvantage may especially be in need of this anticipatory guidance to help start out that relationship with their infant very well from the beginning. Our future research direction include examining other study outcomes by clusters, and spoiler alert, we've started to look at some of the other outcomes, and it's interesting because it appears that different clusters may be higher risk for different outcomes. So we've started to look at things like confidence in premature infant care, some of the maternal outcomes, the attitude toward their baby, and really that cluster 5 with the high proportion of mental health and low mental health issues and low social support, that's the cluster that is really showing lower scores and confidence in infant care and attitude toward the baby. So we're expecting to see diverse results in terms of the clusters. But for mother-infant interaction, it really does appear to be education and economic disadvantage. So that concludes my presentation. I just want to acknowledge our funders, the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Development, the National Institute of Nursing Research, and the Harris Foundation. And then I just wanted to thank all the women and the premature infants who partook or partook in this study, and because they have really complicated lives, and the fact that they were willing to give us their time to help us understand better how we can help them was fantastic. So if there's any questions, I'll take those now. Or if there's time, I'm sorry. That's a great question. The question was whether we captured pregnancy intention, and unfortunately we didn't. We had a very large interview, and there are so many other things that I wish that we had asked. There are some limitations to asking about pregnancy intention, especially right after the birth of a premature infant, in terms of recall, but I still think it may have been useful, and unfortunately we don't have that. Thank you. That's a good question. Yes, we did include breastfed infants. The proportion that we're breastfeeding directly is small with premature infants, because, and I'm not a clinician, so I don't know all of the details of this, but I know that a lot of the women were pumping and were feeding, you know, from the bottle. And right before discharge, I can't remember how many of our mothers were actually breastfeeding during the feeding, but there were more at the 6-week corrected age follow-up visit, which was later on, where women had started actually feeding out the breast.
So you said you did a 6-week follow-up. Mm-hmm. Did you find, and earlier in the talk, you mentioned that maybe some of the malignant findings were due to there needing to be more of a lag between the birth and the effect.
Yeah. So I did look at the, we did do the NCAST again at the 6-week corrected age follow-up visit, and that's about 3 to 4 months chronological age for these infants. And I did see similar trends. They no longer were significant, and that may be due to the fact that we actually saw intervention effects at 6-week corrected age, where our intervention improved the mother-infant interaction. So we still haven't really teased apart those relationships. At discharge, they hadn't had enough of the intervention yet, and we didn't see intervention effects. There, you know what, we did recruit, we do have some multiples, I think it's maybe about 10, no, it's lower than that. There might be about 10 mothers, you know, and infants that are multiples, but we only selected one of the infants randomly. Any other? Yes?
Is there a literature on the mother's reactions to the baby in the delivery room? And, you know, there was Henry Camp who did a child research, did a video in the 1960s that was very impressive by two women whose credentials were, they were confident. They didn't have any credentials, and they would rate positive or negative the reaction to the baby as a prediction for major problems in parents.
Interesting. And what's the specific question about our study? That's very interesting. Yeah, we didn't have any observations that soon because enrollment happened after delivery, you know, after we were notified that the birth had happened of a premature infant and we got there and enrolled the mother. So we don't have any data collection right at the delivery. So I can't. Not that I know of.